Well, I'm excited to be with you today. Absolutely, completely excited because, well, how can you think about navigating the path forward without considering the opportunities and the challenges of precision agriculture? That's a very exciting thing that we have before us and an opportunity to do a lot of different things. I've invited our panel to come on up to the stage, and as I try to set the stage a little bit for them and for you, by thinking just a little bit about this really massive, world-changing technology that is not actually brand new. It's been going on for 25 or 30 years, but it certainly reached that tipping point where it influences almost everything that we do. Farming by the inch, or using electronic technology to collect and to distribute how we work with our customers and to make agronomic decisions has just grown to an unprecedented level. I remember, so when you get as old as I am, you begin to think about things differently. I remember very distinctly my father telling me many years ago when we were riding the tractor and planting corn, you could always tell how good a farmer is by how straight his rows were. Anybody identify with that? Now people cheat. Straight rows are not even an issue. Everybody has them if they want them. And yet now we've taken this whole concept considerably further. As we begin to really integrate this whole precision agriculture into how we grow crops and how we run our businesses. The old adoption theory of how innovations work their way into an industry holds really well and true when we consider precision agriculture and its impact upon agriculture. The whole thing of innovators and early adopters and early majority and late majority holds really well. And certainly, many of the basics of precision technology are well entrenched in our agricultural production processes now. No question about that. But there's this shift that's going on. This continues to evolve, and it evolves more rapidly. This shift from simply thinking about precision technology as being a way of collecting information or controlling farm equipment is moving to a whole different level of what do we do with all of this data? How do we use that information? How do we transfer that information to the right people at the right time? How do we protect the confidentiality of that information? How do we as ag retailers deal with this kind of technology in our own businesses? That reads a lot of challenges, a lot of questions. How much should I invest in my dealership? How much should I invest in my business in this thing called precision agriculture? And many of you have gone a long way with that already. Of course, if things continue to change the way they have been changing, we still may be on the edge of really controlling and using precision technology as we will in the future. But there's a lot of questions about how much we should invest. How much support should I provide my customers? Who should I hire? What kind of training should they have? What kinds of things do our customers really need? Maybe the all-important question is, what are they willing to pay for? Because these investments take a lot of cash, a lot of training, a lot of commitment. Where do we go with that? And so as we think about that, one of the most important things we can do, I believe, is, well, it's what many of you have always done, is you listen very well. You listen to the customers. You try to understand the customers. We try to listen to customers, and we try to anticipate what it is they need and want, and then we try to adapt our businesses to that. This is a big challenge for us. I know personally that many of you I've talked to over the last two or three or four years saying, how far do I go? How fast do I go? What do I do? What's really going on? What's this whole thing of that when we integrate the genetics and the data and the information and the equipment and try to put all that together, what role does the ag retailer play if we're trying to adapt? The only way we'll ever even have a glimpse of that is to listen very carefully, as many of you already do, to your customers as we're thinking about what they do with this whole concept of precision technology and what it may mean. I mean, one of the fundamental questions, do farmers really need ag retailers as we've known it in the old days? What will ag retailing look like in the future? How can ag retailers listen, hear, and adapt to this kind of a marketplace? And that's why we've invited three important growers to our stage today. Very carefully selected, by the way, to be many on the cutting edge of technology, but very different kinds of applications, because each is from a different part of the country, each has a different cropping system, each has a different kind of a business model, and each of them look at precision agriculture very differently. On your left, on my left, you're... What is that? Left. It's over here. That's where you are. No question about that as we look at this. Jeff Wilson is a farmer from the southern part of Indiana, around Franklin, Indiana. And then beside him, we have, get my names, make sure I don't mess anything up here, Brad Murray. Brad Murray is from Wisconsin.
Yep.
Darlington. Yep. Darlington, Wisconsin. And then we have Byron Seward, who is from the state of Mississippi. Now, I couldn't introduce them nearly well enough, so I've asked each of them to give us a thumbnail sketch of their business and how it's organized. In fact, I'm going to do this in two different pieces. One, I'm going to ask you to share with our audience a little bit about something about your farm, your cropping system, the way you're structured, how you operate. And then I'm going to come back and I'm going to ask each of you to talk to us a little bit about how you're currently using precision technology on your farm. And then we're just going to open it up and go from there. Is that okay? As we move toward the end of our session, we'll have the opportunity for you to ask some questions as well, because I have a hunch we're going to uncover some things that you might find very interesting. So I'm going to start with Jeff. Would you tell us a little bit about your farm business and how it's structured and what kind of things you do on your farm in Franklin?
We farm 1,400 acres, corn and soybeans, finish about 20,000 pigs a year. My father still farms with us daily and daily involved in the farming operation. And my wife does all the record keeping and has been a major part of now managing the data that we're creating from precision farming.
So your farm is a hog grain farm operation.
Yes.
Dad's still a little bit involved in the business. Your spouse is involved with you. You've got a pretty typical farm, I guess we'd say, for that part of the country.
Yeah.
All right. Brad, tell us about what your background is and your farm operation in Darlington.
I started farming on and off a little bit in 1997. I'm a fifth generation on our farm in Darlington, Wisconsin. We have about 2,200 acre grain farm consisting mostly of corn and soybeans. After college, I didn't go immediately back to the farm. I worked in ag retail and had the privilege of doing that, a lot of what you guys do. And I learned an extreme amount of information from that and worked on the precision ag side of that. And until I got too busy with the farm growing and with the precision ag side of with the company I was working for growing, that I couldn't handle both at the same time, and our family was expanding at the same time, so we moved over to the farm, and my wife and I is very involved in it. She kind of keeps a lot of the glue together on the farm, and takes over a lot of the responsibilities with the financial end of it, and also dealing with some logistics at times when it's busy during the year.
So you have actually interesting background, because you were actually involved in ag retailing early in your career and did a lot of precision farming technology at that point, but now full-time farming, have been for a number of years. I heard you say last night, triplets?
Yes, you bet.
Interesting. As you've managed that pretty well too, it sounds like.
Yep. You bet. It's very interesting.
Yeah, I can imagine that. Yeah. In fact, your spouse last night was worried about whether they were doing their homework properly or not while you were down here. Hey, so you look at precision farming almost from two sides. One, from the ag retailer side, because you used to be there. Now you're seeing it strictly from the farmer standpoint. Very interesting.
Yes.
Right? Byron, tell us a little about what your farmer's like in Mississippi.
Yeah, I'm from Mississippi. I'm the third generation, my son, fourth generation to farm. We farmed 22,000 acres of cotton, corn, soybeans, rice, wheat, and oats.
Okay. Yeah. And where are you? You're located, I think I wrote down here someplace, you're located in Louise,
Mississippi.
Mississippi.
Yeah.
Right. What's that like here? What kind of agriculture is it like around there? Is that the Delta?
It's in the southern end of the Mississippi Delta.
So your major crops are soybeans, cotton?
Cotton, corn.
Cotton,
soybeans,
and corn. Soybeans?
Rice, wheat, and oats.
Oh, that's... And are you pretty spread out? That's a lot of acres. Are you pretty spread out?
Yeah, it's spread out. It's maybe 30-mile radius. It's about 85 miles to drive around one time.
Now, as I remember right, Brad, you're pretty spread out too, actually, with your 2,200 acres, right?
Yeah, it's kind of, we were talking earlier, and it's amazing. I'm really jealous that you got that many acres that close together. That's pretty good deal from where I'm from. There's such a competition for land, it's hard to kind of keep things close together.
All right, so a lot of spread. You've got it tight together, don't you?
Yeah, I'm still in one county, but I'm every corner of the county.
Yeah, but Jeff, you're tight. You're pretty tight operation.
Probably 13-mile radius.
Oh, well, you're spread out some too. All right. Well, it sounds like three different kinds of farm operate, but let's think about the precision technology for a little bit. Jeff, how are you? Where are you with the adoption of the precision technology? What kinds of technology are you currently using in your farm operation? Would you give me a thumbnail sketch of that?
Yeah, we're fairly new. We've done yield mapping, for probably 5 years. That's where we started at. 2 years ago, we got our first auto guidance system on a tractor. This past year, we've kind of jumped in pretty heavily into the precision side of it, and now we're using precision planting. Most of the options that they offer, and also have using the precision yield monitor. I've updated there, and that's kind of where
we're at. So it sounds like you've been involved in the basics of precision technology for some time, but you've made the plunge, and now you're going a lot deeper.
Yes, and obviously the investment was a big part of what, where we got to the point where we feel like we was ready to take that step and invest the dollars to get more involved in it.
Is that changing the way that you farm? How has that impacted your farming compared to a few years ago from the precision? What's it done?
Well, for me, not being extremely familiar with computers and that side of handling software and everything, it's been an extreme learning curve. So it's created a challenge there. But it's also caused a lot more thought going in at the beginning of the season, and how we're going to proceed, and how we're going to build our database, and how we're going to manage that information, and what are we going to do with now? How are we going to create a way to manage and use the information that we're now getting?
So you're at the stage where you're really trying to get immersed in creating a system that works for you.
Exactly.
So you're trying to, you've got the basics, you're ready to go into the deeper, to deeper. Brad, you brought with you some of this precision technology background, and your farm has been growing. Where are you in this adoption process and the technology you're using?
We started grid soil testing back in 94, 95. I've worked with that, and then as variable rate technology came available in our area, proceeded with that point of dry application. We've repeatedly grid soil tested or area soil tested fields here now 4 or 5 times, repeatedly over the last 20 some years. And the next step that we kind of took, we were looking at yield monitoring. That took place in 97. We started working with yield mapping, yield monitoring. And the auto steer systems came in about 2004, and that was a big, as far as just hardware is concerned, that was a big step for us. It just really opened up a lot of things, along with the the planting stuff gradually phased in as clutch control and roll flow, and that stuff became available. We adopted that. And then we've also been variable rate population planting for the last 5 years.
So you've actually moved quite a long way down that path of adopting the technology, and some of that's been in place for 10 or 15 years. What are your next steps? Where are you going with it?
Well, that's kind of where we're at right now. We're looking at trying to fine-tune how to make our maps better, how to make our planting prescriptions better. That's one thing that we're looking at right now, is trying to bring in. We work with our yield data, we work with our soil test data, and some of our soil types to try to derive that map, but we need to pull in some things like maybe historical satellite imagery, some good data to help kind of bring it all together and make it a little bit more accurate. So we're at that point, and then also another big step for us is logistics. We are a 2,200 acre farm. We're not really a big grower, and we're not really a really small grower either. But I like to have my hands on every aspect of the operation when it is performing, and I want to be able to control that with logistics monitoring and of the machines, trucks, whatever it may be. That's when everything's going. I want to know what's going on. And right now we're having a hard time putting that together into one system, instead of having to have three or four different apps or different types of monitoring systems for trucks versus tractors versus a green facility or what am I?
So I'm hearing two different things here. I'm hearing partly this is about agronomic decisions and how to make the right agronomy decisions come together, but I'm hearing operational kind of things you want to control and use as well.
Right. Right, and then to be able to share that with my supplier too, even the logistics and the agronomic decisions, because a lot of times when I'm working with my ag retailer, whether it be anhydrous or dry fertilizer or whatnot, to be able to coordinate logistics would be a big benefit.
Okay. Well, in fact, I want to come back to that too for both of you here to kind of talk about where you're getting the support from. But Byron, your operation is a little larger. You've been in this precision stuff quite a long time, I think.
Yeah, for a long time.
Tell me about that.
Well, we started out by putting flags in the field to put out fertilizer, grid sampling for, I don't know, maybe 10 different cycles now. So we have a tremendous amount of soil data. But precision farming is our backbone. We farm precision farming. That's where we start. We do nothing that's not precision, not variable rate, everything for prescription. We partner with the retailers. It's a two-way street, give and take, so they can understand what we need and we can understand how they can provide it. But they don't come and say, oh, I've got this product, why don't you try it? That doesn't work. We just, our needs are different. So we run 11 different platforms.
11 different platforms?
Yeah, because we need redundancy, because if one goes down, we're sunk, because we can't operate without it. It's just part of it. So we have multiple platforms. Sanders is a big provider to us. Dakota Fluid Power provides through Allied Precision. Monsanto or Climate Corp or Precision Planting. We do that. I'm a Precision Planting dealer. But we did that just to get the technology. We want all the technology we can get. We use my son and myself do all of it. I have a physics and engineering background, so it comes natural to me. I'm a binary person, so all the data coming in.
You're naturally a geek.
Yeah, it's all binary, so it's either right or wrong, zero or one. So I need clean data, and the people we work with provide the clean data. Everything we do in-house, I usually don't have a field man consults with, and we talk to him about it, but we actually create everything, keep all the data. We don't keep anything on farm. It's all kept by whoever we're doing business with on their servers. It always comes back. We collect all the data. It's a tie into conservation. We can make our inputs less per unit by using precision ag, knowing what we're doing. Then we can go to you and say, oh, by the way, we put out this much P, K, N on the field, and we grew this many bushels or whatever, and we use this much water. You monitor all the irrigation. We can say, well, this much water went on, so we didn't have any nutrients that weren't used, and we didn't have any runoff to amount to anything. So we didn't pollute this stream or that. But we've got it in data form so we can provide it to you, whatever you need, and to say, oh, yeah, y'all didn't do that. We also, you know, we run Satloc, which is Ag Junction, with Hemisphere GPS products. We use Airplane and GVM and Agco Rogator and Deer sprayers. So, and all that's done, we do it ourselves.
So if I heard you right, you said you started out variable rating with flags in the field.
Sure.
Changing the flow as where the flags were. Is that right?
Yeah, retailers hated that. Okay. Because, you know, we were saying, we bought this much potash, and we had this many acres of this, and this many acres of that, and this many. And y'all were under, so you didn't put enough out somewhere, or y'all ran over and you put too much out somewhere. What's wrong with you? Can't you see flags? You know, that's kind of where we started from. But it was good nature. It was a give and take. Our goal now is 5% plus or minus. Really, I like 3% plus or minus product bought, product applied, whether it's liquid or dry. Wow. But we've got the records to show. That's why we want it in-house, because if I'm a retailer and I goof up, I'm going to go tell the farmer, hey, actually, we under-applied 20%. You don't want to do that. So that's why we look at it ourselves, and we say, we know we might have some errors, but we don't care the errors. We just want to know what the errors are. So it's been very good-natured and, you know, really good give-and-take between retailer and farmer on our side.
I want to come back and explore that, because it's a very different kind of an operation, and yet you're still tied in using a lot of your suppliers to work with you in a partnering type relationship. Is that correct?
Yeah, because we have the logistical support.
Right. I want to explore that in some more depth, because that's pretty interesting. But I want to come back, Jeff, just with you for a minute. And when you, where you are right now, getting your arms around all of this kind of technology and data, what do you, at this point for you, what are the biggest challenges that you're feeling in your farm operation that you're most concerned about, or you want to spend some time with?
Yeah. Well, obviously, again, the first thing we look at is cost per acre. You know, what do we have to invest to be able to utilize this technology, and what's going to be the return on it? And then a huge challenge then has just become, you know, where do we start? You know, now we have the ability to variable rate. Mm-hmm. So how are we going to build our maps? So what information are we going to use? We have yield data from the last 5 years. We have grid sampling. How are we going to incorporate that to begin? Because what I begin to learn is I have a lot now that I can do that I didn't used to be able to do, but learning how to begin to implement it, and I've got to build something to start with. You know, I don't have all the answers as to how we're going to best build those variable rate maps.
So you're kicking out a lot of data now.
Yes, a tremendous amount.
And it's going someplace,
yes.
And you want to control where it goes.
Yes.
But you're trying to figure out how to make sense of all of that.
Yes.
What role does your retailer play in that process for you? Because, you know, we've all got a lot of farmers who are now taking that step.
Yeah.
What do you expect?
What we came to learn was we've been using precision equipment for a few years, and then had found out that our local cooperative was a precision dealer, and they have actually hired a full-time person on staff to assist with the new technology and to service, to be technical assistance to me when I'm out in the field and things go down. They're my first contact. We've worked with them all the way from the installation on the planter, all the way to now through spring and through harvest of one season, and so I'm drawing from their information and expertise as well as for what they can offer me on how we're going to begin to build this.
Let me push that a little further. When you say you draw on that information, is that something you're asking the questions they're answering, or are you actually working hand-to-hand with them in those kinds of things?
It's more of a hand-to-hand. I have my ideas of where I'm wanting to go, where I'm wanting to take this with, and so I'm beginning to bounce those off of them to find out you know, do they feel like this is a good direction? Do they feel like this is the right step first? Do they feel like we should include some other information that I hadn't considered? So they're playing a huge role in how we're beginning to put this together and make it work.
So it sounds like you're depending a lot on your ag retailer to help you understand what you can do, what the possibilities are, and to really work with you very closely hand in hand.
Yeah, and again, one thing that really helps with that is we have a relationship of over 20 years working with the same retailer, so there's a lot of trust that has been built over the years. So, you know, I don't feel like that I'm going to them and they're saying, well, you know, let's use all this stuff. You know, buy all this from me and it will add the bushels into your tank. So so there's a lot of previous trust that has been built with the retailer to help me feel comfortable with allowing them to be a part of the decision-making process.
Jeff, you're a little further down the road with that. And you've got a lot of understanding. I've said Jeff, I'm sorry, Brad. I understand that you've gone a lot further with that, and you had a lot of information coming in. How do you work with your retailer, and what are some of the challenges you're facing?
As far as bringing data in and working with the, I work with my ag retailer quite closely on fertility management. I rely on them to provide me with some good data on how to best manage our crop removal and what our build level should be on our fertility, because we kind of struggle at times working with grid sampling. Over the years, we've seen some data from our universities that suggest that X amount of pounds of fertilizer is removed from X amount of bushels of corn or beans or whatnot, and when we go back and retest, we find out we're falling short based off of those recs, so then we need to work with them to figure out exactly what adjustments we need to make, and they've been really well, done really well at making those adjustments and allowing us to get our levels where we need to be at so we can maintain our yields. And that's something I work with them real closely on.
Okay, and so you're dependent upon them to help you understand what your goals should be and then how you adjust to meet those goals?
Yep, work through that, change equations as we need to for the variable rate application.
And how closely do you work with those the people that you're dependent on in making the agronomic decisions? Or is that something you prefer to do yourself?
I've got an idea of where we need to be and what we want to do on a year-to-year basis.
Yeah.
But any of the fine-tuning as far as you know, how we're going to adjust and what we need to do, it's a direct two-way street between me and my crop advisor.
Just a moment ago, we were talking to Jeff about the trust level that's built into that. Is that am I just assuming that trust level is just as important to you in that, or
it's very,
or do you do,
it's very
depend
important.
On yourself?
No, it's very important that the trust level is there, no matter who I'm dealing with in ag retail. It's I need to know that I'm dealing with a retailer that has a very good reputation and does an exceptional job and is pretty much a technology leader is a big key for me.
Technology leader. How
right.
do you recognize a technology leader? What are the things that impress you?
Well, you've got different retailers throughout the country. You've got some that took the bull by the horns and ran with technology, and then you've got their competition that has gotten it because their competitor has it. They got it because they needed to get into it. I prefer to roll with the lead guys.
So somebody that demonstrates they're right on the cutting edge
yep.
of the technology is that's important, and then there's a long relationship with a supplier. Is that correct?
Right, right. Yeah, if that, you know, that retailer that we are working with, you know, not only, okay, they see the technology, they've jumped on board with it, but they're using it as their business model. You know, they're developing their business around the technology. And then they do an awful good job of demonstrating to other growers how much more profitable you can be with the technology that they offer and services they offer, and it just is a good fit.
Okay, good. Byron, How do you look at this relationship? You mentioned already that you have a lot of different platforms. You're working with a lot of different retailers. Can you give me some insight and examples of how you work with the suppliers in your marketplace?
Well, what we'll do from an agronomic standpoint is we'll say to the field manager, say, well, look, you come and present your case. I'm going to present my case. We're going to argue, and we're going to see who's going to come out on top.
You're going to what?
I'm going to present my case for doing a certain thing. He's going to present a case for doing the same thing, and we're going to see who's the best.
You're going to argue with him?
Sure. Because he might see something I don't see, and I might see something he doesn't see. More eyes, better.
All right.
You know, we want to know, we want to argue with them, we want to pick the brain, we want to get all the information we can from them and go that way. That's how we might find out something new to do. They might have even thought about this, or they may be doing something that we hadn't thought about. So we're quick to jump on anything like that. But it makes it where you're partnering up, where you're being most efficient users of an input to get an output. Makes a retailer more efficient, makes him more responsible, more sustainable in agriculture, makes me more sustainable. It just goes hand in hand. So, no, we respect what the retailer knows and what he wants to do, and then we're going to see, well, what can we do in the future? What can we do tomorrow? Everything's going fast. Time to get after it.
So when you define that partnership, you're pretty literal with that. You expect that to be a two-way street, that you're going to be helping them as they help you?
Sure.
And how does that play out? I mean, you're sharing your information?
Yeah, I share information with them. I give them any information they want. They can store the data. Like Sandra says, drop-down menus. We can write all our controller files for any piece of equipment. My son does that. We implement that, do it on site. So we're sharing, we're seeing how they work, what their strengths and weaknesses are. We see what our strengths and weaknesses are. We bounce off the retail association, the group. They bounce off what we're doing. They can see what we're doing. You know, it helps them say, well, this guy might be doing what somebody's going to do 4 years from now. What do we do? You know, they can learn from me. I can learn from them. Because it's no good if you're a retailer coming, I'm going to sell you something. He's going to have stale ideas. There's no way to, because he's going to sell what he's got in inventory, his intellectual property at the time. He's not going to sell something he hadn't thought of, but I want what he hadn't thought of, because that's, you know, I know what happened in the past. I want to know what's happening in the future. You know, it's time to get after that. You know, it's, you know. So it's ever evolving, ever changing. And so without the retailer out bringing ideas in and me bouncing them off me and me bouncing my ideas off them, how logistically do they deliver? How do you get it here? I'm a manufacturer. I just got a lot of little plants out there. So I got a logistics is a big deal. I've got to get things in and out. Agronomics is a big deal. I've got to know what the changes might be. What can I do? How refined can I do? Measuring, like we remotely measure everything. From fertilizer to water to people, everything's monitored. We've watched everything 24 hours a day. I sleep. We don't even watch it about 16 hours a day. I sleep 8 hours a night. So monitoring all that, then we can quantify that. And I can tell the retailer, I said, look, we only used like 0.88 pounds of nitrogen per bushel of corn this year to produce 230 bushels per acre on 5,000 acres. I can whittle down my inputs. He can see what we're doing. I can see how he can provide logistics, how they can get product to me. If we're going to use this much product, I know ahead of time I'm going to need this much. What can you price it for? You know, how long can you carry me? What I need to pay up front? You know, it's many things. They just go hand in hand. The more you know, the more data you collect, the better decisions you can make. You're not going to fall in a hole somewhere. And I tell all of you, there's not too much data. There's never too much data, because we're people. We can look at it and say, oh, that data's no good, throw that to the side. You can quickly run through it.
It sounds like you're trying to integrate lots of different kinds of data together and trying to understand the complexity of this production process.
That's correct.
So that you can see some of these intricacies.
Yeah, and once you see the intricacies, then you can start managing much better, because I can put out way less nitrogen than anybody, most any farmer, because I know I'm going to probably get the yield, not the maximum yield, but I'm going to get the maximum economic yield. So I can see that, and I can put that out and go home and go to sleep. He's going to be sitting there, well, I should have put out 50 more pounds of nitrogen. I don't know if he's keep continuously worrying about this. Well, I don't worry about anything. You know, I've already seen it.
What I think I hear, and Mike talked about in our first presentation this morning, about this kind of gap between what we have potential of doing and our ability to manage that. And I hear you recognizing that. Is that
that's
your
correct.
Perspective?
Yeah, that's what the data brings. And you can squeeze that gap up. Conservation is a big thing that flows right out of all this. Because we know everything that we put out. Like we say like on a square foot. Every square foot, we've got a time and a place and a product. And it's all, we've got it all in the data. It's all there, all filed. So I can tell you, on that square foot, I put out this much N, this much P, this much K, this many herbicides. I got that much yield, and it happened this day, and that time. And this much water was used, and this is what we looked at, the outflow of the field was. So we know that nothing left the field much. Our soil erosion is this. So, but it's all in form. I can bring it up and print it on you and say, here. So, the public's not going to look at me and say, hey, that guy's really making a mess of things, because I say, well, this is what I did. You think, can you do any better? I mean, what would you do? I'll be glad to listen to anything you've got to say. Tell me what you would do. You know, we're not stuck on what we think. We're just stuck on what might be the right thing. And it might be, you might know about it, or I might know. But I don't know who knows. I just know, let's argue about it and see what looks good.
So what I hear you saying is, it's your philosophy that if you're both talking about things neither of you completely understand, that you may come up with new nuances, insights we sometimes call it, or knowledge about the production process that turns out to be good for you and for the supplier.
That's correct. And we're never going to understand it. That's a good thing about it. Because nobody's ever going to know exactly what to do.
Yeah, it's interesting. Very interesting. Let me come back to you, Jeff, for just a minute as we think about the kinds of frustrations that you may experience now as you're getting deeper and deeper into this. And you've got to learn it. You're on a steep learning curve, right? That I heard you say?
Exactly.
And what are your frustrations with that learning curve that suppliers may be able to assist you on if they have the expertise to do that?
Mm-hmm. Probably the biggest frustration is the beautiful sunny day that you've got everything ready to roll and something didn't connect up that day.
Oops.
And you don't know what the heck to do about it. I mean, it's fairly new.
Have you ever been sitting there 4 hours waiting for somebody to come out and make something work right, was supposed to work to start with?
We had a few days where we had a few hours a day, but as we made this major step, that was one of the things that I considered in my mind and was really mentally prepared that, okay, I've heard people talk that have taken this step. You know, I know there's going to be some days that we're going to be wanting to be rolling full bore and something doesn't work and we're going to be down for a little bit. So we're actually a little, have a little extra equipment for the amount of acres that we farm. So, you know, I was more prepared that, okay, a few hours down here isn't going to mean that we're not going to finish when we need to. It's going to delay us a little bit. But so going into that, but from our local cooperative that I'm using, that was one of the amazing things that I found with them was that they were, the guy on the other end didn't always have the answer, but within probably 20 minutes I'd get a phone call back from him. We'd be working on the problem. He'd either be sitting in the tractor with me, or he'd be talking with me over the phone. Sometimes there'd be a third party on the phone if he couldn't figure it out. And so that was the level of assistance that I had to make this equipment work, which was, you know, major important to me, especially getting started into it, to know that I had that kind of support.
Yeah, for a minute there, I thought you were telling me it's almost more complicated than it was worth, but you're telling me the level of service that you're getting is helping you work through those things.
Yeah, because there were some, honestly, some days that I thought maybe it was more complicated than what it was worth. But again, having the end goal in mind of where I wanted to go, I knew it was the steps we needed to take, and wanted to, you know, I feel like I'm farther ahead of some of the other farmers in the area, going ahead and getting started on it, getting some things worked out, getting headed down that road, and rather than waiting until, you know, being the last guy to adopt and to figure it out.
Are you feeling right now that while there's still this learning curve we're going through, that it's worth, you're going to see payback or are seeing payback already from that investment?
Yeah, we had the most ideal growing season this year that we could have asked
for. Pretty hard to go wrong this year.
Yeah, so everything that I feel like I invested in the precision technology this year had huge returns. I mean, all I have to do is talk to my neighbors, know what their yields were, talk to my local suppliers, knowing what, you know, I mean, they're talking to multiple farmers, knowing what their yields are, and they're consistently telling me, the guys that have went down the road that I'm going down are, you know, 10, 20, you know, as much as 50 bushels ahead of some of the standard practices that
you're feeling good about that thing.
So, yeah, I mean, it made the headaches worthwhile, but again, we had the ideal growing season, so I know
it's a good year to start, right?
It's a good year to start.
Yeah. And you're, I don't want to feed you words here, but I think you're telling me that the way the ag retailer that you're working with helped you through those things, you give that a lot of the credit for making this work.
I have to, because, you know, with my lack of knowledge to work with this, with what's available to me, I have to have somebody that can be there to help me work through the issues when it doesn't work.
Yeah. And how many acres you say you farm?
1,400.
1,400 acres is a pretty good sized farm. It's not huge, but it's... But that's significant enough, that's large enough to justify some of this technology that you're using effectively.
Yeah, and that's just where we were at. I mean, we're small enough that it was hard to make that initial investment. But, you know, getting to the point where we felt like, okay, the reward is going to be worth it if we were for that number of acres. And of course, we're looking to expand our operation as we go. So I'm factoring that into the cost as we're...
Sure. So it's a long-term return on that investment.
Yes.
And you're encouraging people that are your peers to kind of move that direction too, or...
I will encourage them to move that direction, also factoring in there's going to be some frustration along the way, because if they're not prepared for that frustration, it's going to be disastrous.
But picking the right partner to help you through the frustration is there.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Brad, what are the challenges that you're feeling as you're a little further down that path? What are you facing in the next two or three years, and what does the role that the suppliers play in that?
Probably one of the biggest things is keeping up with the logistics technology, trying to get everything incorporated. When I was talking to Byron earlier, talking about 11 different platforms, the technology is available right now in this country or around the world or wherever to take everything and put it together and have it work off of one platform. It's just that nobody's done it. The manufacturers are too bullheaded to join together and try to put something together. It's just not there. That's one of the bigger changes, and that's more on the manufacturing side. With my ag retail is to be able to help me put my decision, or like we talked about before with the soil testing, also with the variable rate planning, add another layer of data, or another layer of information to fine-tune zones within the field to get the maximum amount of production out of it. Working with... you know, some weather data, working with satellite data, archived satellite imagery that you can use to pull that together. That's our next phase. We need to fine-tune our decisions on how we are applying plant food, working with the variable rate technology that's out there. And
Now, you have a pretty good background in precision kinds of things. Yep. So it sounds to me like you're hungry for more information. Does the retailer, how do you get that information? Where do you pick up these staying on top of the new ideas and stuff?
It's just talking to people. trying to discover new ideas, new things, seeing what they're seeing. There might be some meetings that my ag retailers are at where they're picking up data, you know, things like the ARA convention.
Yeah, okay.
You know, there's a lot of good exhibitors out there to have a lot of neat ideas. And
so you expect them to pick up that information,
yep,
and bring it to you.
Right.
Or do you sometimes go directly for the information and go to them with questions? Which?
Both.
Which? Both?
Both, yep. Both.
Right.
Yep. Anything that's more on the agronomic side, I'll lean on my ag retailer a little harder. Anything that's on the technical hardware, software side, I may jump that avenue and go direct myself.
Okay. So you're not afraid to go direct?
No, not at all.
Right. Now, Byron, you do a lot of direct communicate. You have a local retailer you work closely with,
yes,
but you go directly to basic manufacturers a lot. Is that right?
That's correct.
And they come to you direct because you're a larger farmer. They might have some interest in doing that.
Yeah, we're in the South, and their equipment breaks readily where we farm, so they like to test it out on us. Yeah, so we talk to engineers and software engineers, hardware, you know, all kinds to try to refine what we're doing on farm.
We've been talking a lot about the agronomic decisions here, but you mentioned earlier, and you did too, Brad, about the, I'm going to call it logistics and operational kind of efficiencies that can come out of this. Now, in your operation, you mentioned that was an important part of this whole thing for you.
Yeah, it is, because logistics in agriculture is very important, because you've got product, and product goes to market. The shorter time span between product and going to market, the less the cost is. You know, our trucks have to run efficiently. We run different platforms because we monitor 18-wheelers, but we don't want to have John Deere's equipment on 18-wheeler monitoring that. And we want to keep it segregated, too, because if one goes down, then the others are still running.
Do you monitor all of your rolling stock, all of your trucks? And are you doing?
Yeah, everything but my wife's car.
Let's see, where do I go with that?
Just throwing that out. No, we monitor everything that moves.
Everything that moves. What do you do with it? Give me an example of how you monitor truck movement, for example.
Well, we have a new driver comes in right before Thanksgiving because his uncle went to work somewhere else. So we don't know much about new drivers. So I'm sitting there yesterday or the day before watching. I said, that guy's exceeded the speed limit 5 times between the 24th and 25th of November. And at what time and where he did it.
You can see that on your monitor at your office.
Yeah. I can see it on my cell phone right here if you'd
like. No kidding.
Sure. or my laptop that's in my back pocket here. Now, I can see it, so I call my son, who had been to Mississippi State talking about precision ag to one of their short courses. So I said, look, so-and-so did this, this, and this. He said, you need to go talk to the guy. And so he talks to him and tells him, look, this is not going to work. If you've got to drive that fast, you need to go somewhere else. We got liability issues is a big part of it. And you don't want to have a wreck. So, no, we monitor all that. And tractors, I can tell you if somebody went in the field, we keep 6-month record on tractors. There's snail trail for it. And I can go back and say, March 23rd at 3 o'clock, you were supposed to be planting at 4.8 miles an hour, and you're planting at 5.2 miles an hour. You know, that's not going to help me. If it doesn't help me, it's not going to help you. So I can go back and review everything they did anytime in a tractor.
So you can do that. Do you?
Yes.
How do you? I mean, look, 5.2, 4.8, geez, I'm happy to get across the field and back without breaking down.
But that's why yield doesn't go up. Because you're happy with the norm, or you're happy with something that's not quite good enough.
Why I ain't farming, I guess.
You got to be good to be good. You can't just average. Average doesn't work. I say, look, you got to do this, or a call on a cell phone and say, hey, what are you doing? You turned the wrong way there. Or why'd you stop at that tree? You know, you had your break 5 hours ago. What are you stopping now for?
You actually do that?
Yes. We call up people all the time just to keep them on their toes. We don't let anybody, everybody knows, everybody's looking at everybody. And you'd be surprised, after a little while, everybody gets good-natured about it. They work better. They're not as tired. It's really a good thing, because it's not like I'm spying on them. They know I'm out.
That's a trick, though, isn't it? To make sure they don't see it as big brother watching.
That's right. Well, I'm out in the field, too, and it's kind of good-natured ribbing. You know, where were you? They asked me, where were you at 6 o'clock this morning? I was asleep. you know. So everybody knows, everybody's watching everything. And it's good for their safety, because you can tell somebody's too tired. But look, you need to rest. Somebody else needs to do this right now. So it's not Big Brother. It's, look, what's good for you? What's good for me? Let's everybody work together, you know. Have you been on the job, too many hours on the job, you need to go home? Yeah. Why don't you take time off and go fishing and do something? You can tell when people are having problems.
You mentioned something earlier. I just want to follow up on that monitoring equipment use can be helpful in your relationship with your suppliers.
That's right.
Tell me about that.
Well, with John Deere, they've gotten a lot better with their charts and are online now. So you can watch it closely. We were watching it through another supplier because they don't have real time. We like to watch it real time. So with Deer, I can say, this past year I used X number of hours for this tractor, this tractor, this tractor, and this tractor. I'm going to trade them in. What do you need for your trade-in? What do you need tractor? What's the best-looking tractor I could give you for the best resale value? And they'll say, well, I need a tractor that looks like this. And so with our monitoring, we can say, hey, this tractor's getting right in their sweet spot. Quit running that tractor, bring another tractor in that's got too few hours. So we get the tractor in the retailer's sweet spot. He takes that, trades it off, gets maximum trade-off for it. I get maximum money for me. He's happy because he's getting his used fleet out there, good shape. His used guys are real happy because they got a good tractor right in the zone they're looking for. So without the remote monitoring, you'd have to pay somebody like Branson, ride around with a pad right now on this tractor, and serial number's got XXX. It would just, you know, it would just have. That's a lot of data hard to manage, but it's not hard to manage when you've got a screen up in a graph says, oh, that tractor's got this many hours on it, and it ran from this day of the month until months later at that day, and you've got an average of so many hours a day, you know, boom. And so we can keep product for resale in better shape doing that remote.
So you're using data, not just agronomic stuff. You're using it for risk management. You're using it for value creation. You're using it for relationships with your suppliers. All of those things contribute to this overall efficiency of the operation and profitability.
That's right. We can look. You can actually use data, and it's almost like you're looking in the future because you know what you want to see out there. So if you can quantify it right now, actually know that it's quantified, not have any questions about it, then the future is like that piece of equipment. It's worth more in the future because what I did now is looking out in the future and see what they need. Or crop. You know, I need to, is my grain in good condition? Is the moisture too low? Can I gain bushels by rehydrating this corn? If I do, what does the weather look like coming forward? Okay, can I, you know, algorithms run the fans, cut them on and off. I can boost that. The product goes to the feed mill. It's the right moisture. It's not too dry. It breaks up good for them. Feeds the chickens good. You know, it's just everything's tied together.
Everything's tied together. You're using that data to bring it together with. Jeff, when you're thinking, you're hearing some of this, and you probably don't have six more tractors you can run out there just to cut the hours a little bit, right?
Right.
That's not quite works in a smaller operation. But you're telling me that staying on top of how to use that data, how do you use that data? Boy, you're getting tons of stuff out of there right now. Do you sit down what's the process by which you turn that data into knowledge? How do you take data, make knowledge, insights to make the best maps for next year?
Yeah, I think in our case we're obviously looking at that when it comes in the fall, and then during the winter time we'll meet with our ag retailer, and we'll begin to go over that and begin to analyze it, and they'll have a big input on how we begin to.
How does that really work?
That.
Is there a formal meeting that you actually spend all day sitting looking at that? Is it a half an hour discussion that you kind of ask him what he thinks you should do, or how does that unfold, and how do you learn from that process?
It's probably going to be a setup meeting for sure, because there's going to be a lot to talk about. There's several fields and several different types of soil and a lot of different products we can use, and so it's.
What can your retailer do to prepare for that time to make that really valuable for you? Are they really well prepared? Can they do more? What kind of things can they do to make that a more productive experience? That's a tough question, but.
Yeah, it is. You know, I think they're going to have that. I hope we don't come to that meeting if they don't already have that information at hand, obviously. But
you expect them to be well prepared for that.
I expect them to know what we're going to talk about that day, and to know the things that have to be covered, and to be ready to make some decisions that day, so we don't have to keep coming back and revisiting.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yes,
and that's a direction. How do you work with your retailer, Brad?
Pretty much. Kind of what we talked about a little bit before,
right.
on the fertility side quite a bit. Another thing that I have another retailer that I use for my seed, for majority of my seed corn purchases,
okay.
and soybeans and stuff like that. And there's a lot of data that I go through pretty extensively to figure out which hybrids that we use, because we're flipping hybrids every year. We're never planting the same package every year,
okay.
because the technology changes fast. We do have maybe one or two out of our selection that we are repeatable with, just because they've been good, and we're always trying to find something better and stay on top of the seed technology for what, you know, to maximize our yield. And there's a lot of the data that we'll look through that'll show the this hybrid here yielded 200 bushel an acre, this hybrid here yielded 200 bushel an acre. However, within the same pass across the same land, this one ran anywhere from 120 to 240 going across the field with the different soil types, where this one only had, let's say, a 10 to 15 bushel variance going across there. So a lot more stable hybrid versus a lot more of, let's say, a racehorse hybrid that performed better in better soil types versus poor.
So does that mean that when you're working with your retailer, you're going to have a seed person involved in those discussions as
yes.
well as a fertility person?
Yes. Yep.
Equipment always run the way it's supposed to?
Never. No. No. It's
well, how do you factor that in then?
Well, that's kind of a whole different deal there, because my biggest frustration has been with technology and equipment has not been the hardware. It's been the software on the controllers, whether it's auto steer systems, planter drives, any kind of an application system. Every time we get a new update, the updates come out about a week before you need it in the planting season or before you start harvest, and then you get to find out what all the bugs were because they didn't do a good enough job debugging the update before it came out.
And that's an equipment issue.
Yes.
Should the ag retailer, should they play a role in that at all or not?
I think they play a big role in, because they're running some of the same components we are, and they have the same frustrations.
Okay. Okay. Byron, let me come back to you. On Monday of this week, there was a huge article, full-page article in the New York Times. It had two things on it. One was something called disruptive technologies and how it's changing the world. Second thing was a great big picture of a farmer, Indiana or Kansas or someplace, that was, I guess, a pretty good-sized farmer, was talking about how precision technology gave him a substantial edge over his competitors, which was probably other farmers, particularly farmers that weren't adopting the technology. You have any perspective on that kind of an idea?
That's true.
That's true.
Yes.
Is that part of your strategy then, to use that to gain a competitive edge in the marketplace?
Well, probably.
Yeah.
Not necessarily. It benefits us, but you do get a competitive edge. So. Yeah. We can scale up or down, and it's not a problem. Everything, if you buy an area, the first unit's just like the last unit. So we can increase size. I mean, we could double our size and not have much problem, because it's you're doing the same thing over and over. It's repetitive. Everything's
right.
collected. So it's not like you're having to get your hands around a lot of different things.
Good.
They're all the. It's all the same. It's each unit. It just keeps multiplying. So yeah, it gives you an advantage. And what we can do is we can look at things, and we can see how those things relate to each other. You know, the yield maps, the everything. And I want to tell you, everything in agriculture is local.
Everything is local.
Everything's local. Forget yep. trying to. What works for you doesn't work for me. What works for you doesn't work for him. And what works for me doesn't work for either one of y'all. Because it's local and it's different, so you have to get on a local scale. So that's where your retailer comes in. He knows your local, his corporate headquarters knows sales, but they don't know what the heck. What he would do would cause me problems. So the local is important.
And local important. Meaning your farm with your business model or your farm model different than even a neighbor may have because they think and do things quite differently.
That's correct.
And you expect the ag retailer to understand those nuances and help you adjust that.
Yeah, but he can't do that. If an ag retailer adjusted to sell just to me, probably go out of business. You know, he has to sell to his average customer. But what I need everything he uses. So somewhere in his organization, there are things that I can use. His back office, his backbone, I can use that. That's my backbone.
And you need that kind of support.
I need that. I need that, plus I need the local store.
Interesting insights.